Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Travel to the good old days. Hello, friends. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Rebecca. Today is April the 9th, and we are starting a three-day travel article called Journey into the Past. Over the course of 3 days, we will take you to different places in the U.S. that many of them have some historical significance. And that will be, we will be time traveling to those places. But before we go further, first I'd like to invite Peter to the program.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Rebecca. Nice to be here.
Peter, it's great to have you. Since we're talking about time travel, about skipping around in time, I'd like to ask you, Peter, if you can go back into any period in history, which period would you go to? If you could time travel, just like Back to the Future, you could time travel to a different period and observe what's going on. Which period would you like to go to?
I love this question. I ask this whenever I have a group of people don't know each other well, and just a way to kind of get to know a little more about each other. I have something to talk about. Now, I'm assuming that I'm only traveling as an observer, that I can't go back in history and somehow change the past so it changes the future, anything like that. With that in mind, yeah, we could talk about just this for 3 days. But yeah, one of the places I definitely would go to if I had a time machine would be, there's just so many. I would go back to the Emperor Constantine in the ancient Roman times, ancient Roman Empire. The Emperor Constantine, this is about the 4th century AD. He was a very influential Roman emperor. He fought a decisive battle, which he claims he was directed by God to do that. He was given victory by the divine powers, and he claimed to have seen a symbol in the sky directing him to go ahead and attack in this way. And since he was successful, it had a big influence on the Roman Empire. And I would like to go back to that day, to that time, where he claimed he saw the sign in the sky, and see if I could see it too, just to see if, because there, you know, historians debate, we only have one historian's word on whether he actually saw it. I think it's maybe even Constantine's own memoir of the event. But since it was such a pivotal turning point in Western history, I would like to go back there and see if he actually did see something in the sky, or if it was just how he told the story afterwards.
That's really interesting. Not quite the answer I was expecting, because that's not one of the most famous, perhaps famous incidents in history, but it's definitely an important moment in history. Well, that's really interesting. I think I would like to go back into time for many different periods, but if we can only pick one today, I might want to go back to the Renaissance period. I would like to spend a day with one of the great masters, like maybe Michelangelo, and just watch him paint the Sistine Chapel. Watch a master doing his best work for one day. Because they might not realize how good they are, but hundreds of years later, people will still be admiring their work. Yeah. So I would love to just spend a day hanging out with them. Now, I don't want to lift a finger, but I just want to sit quietly beside the great master and see them do their work. I think that would be incredible, just observing a master doing his or her best work.
And to be able to see the Sistine Chapel ceiling in its original colors would also be a treat. And it's, you know, before hundreds of years of dirt and grime had soiled it, I know they've restored it recently, but still to be able to see it in its original vivid colors would be amazing.
It would be amazing. But Peter, we have to get into our article today because we have many places to travel to.
Yeah,
we have many, many places over the course of 3 days. So let's get into our journey. Let's get into our first reading for day one.
Journey into the Past. Places to visit in America that are locked in a time warp. Travel is all about the experience. And with a fast-paced world zipping all around us, sometimes it's nice to just catch our breath and dial back to a place that moves a bit slower. Though we still haven't mastered the science of time travel, we do have some special towns in the U.S. that have mastered the art of nostalgia, staying true to their history and customs. So, sit back, relax, and get ready to road trip into the past.
Peter, before we go on, I want to look at our deck, and that's the line right beneath the title. It's Places to Visit in America That Are Locked in a Time Warp. So what is a time warp?
Right. Well, a time warp, we can understand it best by understanding the word warp. And warp means a bend in something that normally doesn't have a bend, like a sword or an old vinyl LP record. If it's warped, normally those things should be nice and flat and smooth. But if they're warped, then they lose some of their power, some of their effectiveness. So a warp in time means that time, you know, it's sort of an abstract science fiction concept, but it's the idea that time has somehow become bent in some way, and it loses some of its consistency. And as a result, you have people living in one period of time right next door to people who are living in another period of time. And in this case, in the case of all the places we'll visit, you have people effectively, you know, the author is using this phrase in a figurative sense, but you have people effectively living in one period of time, 100 years ago or more, right next door to modern 21st century cities and towns.
Or sometimes we have what we called a living museum. And a living museum, it's basically, a lot of times, it's at an old historical site. And then why is it called living? It's not just museum, it's a living museum. It's because you will have people who dress up like the people of that period of time, and then they reenact that period of time for you. You can say they're basically actors. Mm-hmm. They're acting out that period of time. So when we go to some of these places, we can feel it's a more immersive experience. But instead of putting on our virtual reality glasses, these are just real people in front of us who are acting like they're from another period.
Right. Good word there, too. Immersive, meaning something that surrounds you, that is on every side, wherever you look, you are having this experience. And that's certainly, when you go to one of these towns, you are immersed in the period of time that they have set themselves in.
Yes. And before we go on to all these different towns we want to go, let's talk about the appeal of going back in time. Why do people want to do this? And a lot of times it's because our world is moving at a very fast pace. And here in the first paragraph, we have a word, the world zipping all around us.
Yeah.
Zipping. I feel like it's like a word you hear at like the amusement park or something, like
right,
those little cars zipping around.
Yeah, it's like one of those onomatopoeias, a word that sounds like what it's describing. To zip means to go very fast, something that shoots by you, just zips by you, like crash, you know, it kind of sounds like what it is. So zipping, yeah, a fast-paced world. It's an interesting perspective to take on visiting historical locations. I think traditionally, in my experience anyway, they're presented as a chance to understand the past so that we understand the present more, you know, where we come from, our roots and all that. But here the author suggests you might want to go to an old-fashioned place just for the change of pace.
Yes.
Just to slow down a bit.
Yes. And then some of the words we're learning for slowing down is dial back. So if you dial something back, it just means to reduce something. So you're dialing back to a place that moves a bit slower. And then right now, science can't make us time travel just yet. It might be possible down the road someday because so many things are possible now. But presently, we only see time travel in science fiction movies. We can't do this in real life. But although we can't do time travel, we can go back to these special towns, these special villages, that you feel like you're going back in time. And these towns have mastered the art of nostalgia. Nostalgia, this is like an old person's word. What is nostalgia?
Right, nostalgia, and sometimes nostalgia, simply means sort of how it's this attitude, it's this feeling, often a very deep feeling, about how things were better in the past.
Hmm.
People have, we would say that, you know, I am nostalgic for my high school years, or some people are nostalgic for a whole other period in history, usually one that they've been, that they've lived through in some way. People won't usually say, oh, I'm nostalgic for a time in history that was like 300 years before we lived. There'd be no one who could possibly have lived through that and still be around today. But the idea of how somehow, you know, when the present, we never know how the present is going to be. It's the only moment we live in. We don't live in the past or the future. We live in the present, and we are always constantly finding out how the present is going to be. Then when we look into the past, we can see, whether the short past or the distant past, we see, okay, so that turned out this way, this turned out that way, and we can sort of, trim out the unpleasant parts and just focus on the pleasant parts in the past because we know how the past ends. And so it's natural, I think, that we have this feeling of nostalgia. We're drawn into the past, into various times in the past. There's a bit of an edge to it sometimes, because sometimes it can mean ignoring the present and not thinking about the future, just sort of infatuated with the past.
Yes. And then usually when we talk about nostalgia, we feel happy. Like it might be for example, a childhood memory. Like right now, I'm thinking of my family. When I was a child, we would go to a Mongolian barbecue restaurant. I love that Mongolian barbecue restaurant. There were these very old chefs who made the incredible, it's like a non-kind of Indian bread. They would make these incredible bread over the huge, huge stove that they had. I love that Mongolian barbecue place. So when we're feeling nostalgic, you feel happy when you think about it, but also a little bit sad because you can't go back in time. You can only go back in time in your memory. So that's kind of the art of nostalgia or being nostalgic. But we need to get into our first town out of these many towns we will travel to. The first one is called Williamsburg. It's in Virginia. Let's get into our next reading.
Williamsburg, Virginia. A town intentionally stuck in time, colonial Williamsburg is best known for its role in early American history. Williamsburg is a living history museum that realistically recreates life in the 18th century. Here, you'll find reenactors walking the streets in colonial garb and meet blacksmiths, printers, tavern owners, and soldiers. You may even catch a glimpse of George Washington or Thomas Jefferson. Be sure to visit one of Colonial Williamsburg's taverns, offering authentic immersive dining experiences with classic colonial recipes and craft ales. Cape May, New Jersey. This picturesque seaside town is renowned for its Victorian charm, historic preservations, beaches, and small-town vibe. As one of the oldest vacation resorts in the U.S., Cape May boasts a remarkable concentration of preserved 19th century architecture. Its boutique inns and bed and breakfasts enable guests to stay surrounded by history in beautifully restored mansions from the 1800s.
So the first town we travel to is Williamsburg. And this is a town intentionally stuck in time. And here we talk about colonial Williamsburg. When we talk about colonial, we're talking about a period of time when you are under, like when you are a colony, of another country. And of course, when we're talking about the U.S., the only time they were a colony was in the 1700s. In the 1700s, before they declared the Declaration of Independence, they were part of the United Kingdom. So they were part of the British Empire. So at one point, the U.S. was under the control of the British Empire. So that is the colonial period. So Peter, we are going to Williamsburg. So here they call Williamsburg a living history museum. Have you ever been to Williamsburg?
I might have been there once when I was very young on a family trip. I'm not sure. I have no vivid memory of it, but I've always been, I grew up just aware of it. It's in Virginia. That's in the eastern part of the United States. That's where I grew up. So I was kind of aware of it. People would say that they went there from time to time, and I was like, okay, yeah, it's this colonial village, but I don't think I've ever actually been there.
That's okay. Well, imagine we are going there. Well, imagine we're going there. So here again, we have the phrase living history museum. So living history museum, usually with a museum, you just see things that are displayed. But with a living history museum, you see people walking around from that time period, or they're dressed. We have a word in the next sentence. They're walking around in colonial garb. So garb is the costumes, right?
Right. Fun little word there. Just means clothing. Garb.
Garb. And then you have reenactors. What in the world is a reenactor? Why don't they just call it actor? Basically,
right.
A reenactor is an actor, right?
Right. A reenactor is an actor, but acting a specific thing. And it's the word describes not so much the people as the event. They are reenacting something that has already happened once. And that's the verb meaning. A reenactor is a person who participates in the recreation of a past event, very often a historic battle of some sort, a dramatic event. And, they won't reenact the time Joe went down to the supermarket and bought a quart of milk or something. They'll reenact a great battle, a great, history-making event of some sort. And the people who do it are called reenactors.
They're reenactors. And so we have the reenactors. Some of them, they're acting as people from that period. And in that period, we had blacksmiths. Why do we need blacksmiths? Because at the time, we didn't have cars yet, right? They had horses.
Exactly, yeah.
So you need blacksmiths to
make those horseshoes.
The horseshoes, yes. And then you have printers, tavern owners. A tavern is basically a pub, right? But it could be also an inn. Sometimes you can stay in a tavern.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so tavern owners and soldiers. And then here we have two important people from the colonial period. We have George Washington, the first president of the United States, and also Thomas Jefferson. And I want to say how important Williamsburg was in the past. I mean, these days, yes, Williamsburg, colonial Williamsburg, is a living village. But back in the 1700s, Williamsburg was Virginia's colonial capital, and many important things happened there. So that's why Williamsburg is important in history, and Williamsburg today is living off its history of being the colonial capital of Virginia. And that's why you would see people walking around acting like they're George Washington or Thomas Jefferson. And here also, if you go to Colonial Williamsburg, it says here, make sure to visit a tavern. We just said a tavern is like a pub or like an inn. And then make sure to try some colonial recipes and a special type of alcohol.
Yes, an ale. An ale, it's a type of beer made from grain. And it's generally, in terms of taste, it's a bit fruitier, a bit more complex than your typical beer flavor. There's more variety in ales. But that's essentially what it is. It's an alcoholic drink, a type of beer, and, in terms of how powerful it is. That's what you want to compare it to.
So that is L. Well, next we are moving on to another place. Now we're moving from the colonial period to the Victorian period. And the Victorian era is basically the time of Queen Victoria's lifespan. That's between 1837 and 1901. She had a very long life. So Peter, tell us about this place, Cape May, New Jersey.
Right. Well, this is a town, a seaside seaside town, meaning it's, you know, right next to the ocean, down on the beach. And it is, lovely word here, picturesque. Picturesque meaning it is, you look around and almost everywhere you look, it's like a picture, a nice painted picture, because it's so lovely. Something that is picturesque means, that's what that means. And it is renowned, or it is famous for, as Rebecca said, its Victorian charm, historic preservations, beaches, and small town vibe. Vibe, a nice little word we use a lot today, short for vibration, and means a small town vibration, a small town feeling, an atmosphere of being in a small town is what a small town vibe would be.
Yes. And if you go there, you can consider staying at a boutique inn. So a boutique inn is basically just a small, usually very fashionable hotel. It's not part of a chain. So it's a standalone. So you can stay in one of the boutique inns or bed and breakfast. On that note, we have to keep traveling. Now we are moving on to Amish country. Let's get into our next reading.
Amish country, Lancaster, Pennsylvania. The Amish are a Christian group known for their plain dress, pacifism, and rejection of modern technology. Masters of clinging to their roots and traditions, they live in simple, close-knit communities. They farm with horse-drawn tools and do not use electricity from public grids. Lancaster is home to the oldest and one of the largest Amish communities in the U.S., dating back to the early 1700s. Though the Amish speak Pennsylvania Dutch, a German dialect, with one another, they do speak English with outsiders. Visitors can experience the Amish life by taking guided tours of a farm, a horse and buggy ride with an Amish or Mennonite driver, and purchasing fresh homegrown produce or handmade furniture at a market or roadside stand.
Peter, now we travel to Amish country and Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been to this place?
I actually have, yes. Back in about eighth grade, I think it was, my school, which was in the New York City area, took a trip to Amish, to this area of Pennsylvania, and it was an overnight trip. We went to Amish country, but then the next day to make it up to us.
Make it up to us. It was that boring, huh?
Not to make it up to us, they took us to an amusement park in Hershey, Pennsylvania. It was actually where they make Hershey's chocolate bars. They have an amusement park there as well. So since it was a school trip, they had to have some educational aspect to it, and the educational aspect was visiting Amish country. And yeah, I joked about it a moment ago, but Amish country, I think, you know, for 12, 13-year-old kids, the Amish country is a tough sell because it is, you know, it's going back in time and not having the modern conveniences that we take for granted, you know, basically no electricity, no telephones, no television, no cars. And if you aren't interested in history, there's just nothing to do.
There's nothing to do there.
Even the dress, you know, they have deep, admirable religious convictions for dressing the way that they do in a very monochromatic way. But it's visual. Again, to a 12-year-old kid, it's visually boring. You're out in the farm. It's not even in a city. So I'm not the person to hire as the travel agent for the Amish country. But definitely, if you are interested in history, if you're interested in different kinds of cultures that you will find in the United States, particularly those descended from European cultures, Amish country is a terrific place to visit. But, you know, it's not Disneyland.
It's not Disneyland. And let's talk about the Amish for a second. So the Amish, they're a Christian group. Like you said, they're known for their very plain clothing, often in black and white. And then they're also known for pacifism. So pacifism means that you never go fight in a war. like you don't believe in violence.
Right, that all disputes you have should be resolved without resorting to violence, whether it's just an argument with your neighbor or country against country.
Yes.
Whatever we do, no fighting.
No fighting, no war, no violence. And they reject, like you said, modern technology. They don't use modern technology, which makes them very almost alien right now in our world. And what's interesting about Lancaster is in the next paragraph, it's one of the oldest and largest Amish communities in the U.S. So Amish people have been living there for hundreds of years, since the early 1700s. And I looked it up. They have about 40,000, they have over 40,000 Amish people in Lancaster County. In the entire county, they have over 40,000. So that's a huge concentration of Amish people in the U.S. And then there's also a similar group. They're called the Mennonites. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about the Mennonites? The Mennonites, they do use technology, I believe.
They do use technology, yeah. They're descended from European gentleman named Menno Simons, who was a former Catholic priest who then gave up the priesthood and became convinced that the proper way to worship God was not following Catholic doctrines, but what we call Baptist doctrines and theology. And he began this group of people to worship God in the way that he thought was best. And they have continued to do that to this day. And so that's why they are called Mennonites. I don't think they're, as you said, Rebecca, I don't think they're quite as extreme in terms of rejecting modern technology as the Amish are, but you walk among the Mennonites, and it has an Amish feel to it. You know, you feel like these are people who have a very specific religious conviction, and they are fully committed to it and living it out.
Yes, and we talked about the word pacifism just a second ago, right? Pacifism is you don't believe in war or violence. And the Mennonites are similar to the Amish because they also believe in nonviolence. So in a war, they will refuse to be drafted into the army because they don't believe in violence.
Right, and both groups live in what the article calls close-knit communities. Close-knit, something that's close-knit is one in a group in which everyone knows each other well and gives each other support when they need it. You talk about close-knit families. You can also have close-knit communities like the Amish or the Mennonites.
Yeah, so if you'd like to see what a close-knit community looks like, Lancaster is a good place to go. Well, friends, we need to end today's article, but definitely come back tomorrow. We have many more places we'd like to travel to. So this is it for today. I'm Rebecca.
I'm Peter.
Saying goodbye.
Bye-bye.